Welcome to another episode of Repeak, a show about remakes, reboots, and revivals, because nothing's original anymore. My name is Diane Olympia.
And I'm Stephanie Kim. Today, our spotlight is High Fidelity. We'll be focusing most of our conversation on the recently canceled 2020 Hulu series reboot, which is based on the beloved novel by Nick Hornby. But of course, we'll also reference the cult classic early aughts film, which is also based on the novel, starring John Cusack. But first, news! Dio, we were having this conversation offline, but do you want to tell me a little bit more about DC fandom and what it actually is? Because I think it just wrapped. Is that right?
Yes. And I will disclaimer say that this is stuff that I learned secondhand, so I'm not going to pretend to be the expert. But apparently, DC fandom is basically a one-day kind of mini Comic-Con event purely for the DC universe. So that encapsulates everything from the movies to... It could encapsulate TV shows like, you know, The Flash and The Arrow, all that stuff on the CW. Obviously, the physical comic books that are still in circulation and still current, and then also video games. So yesterday was the event. Obviously, it was virtual. The big titles, I think there was like maybe four major big things. And then I guess stuff that's maybe more for like the hardcore DC fans, but for kind of us more casual folks, Wonder Woman, they released a new trailer, and they had like a quick little panel with the cast. The Rock unveiled a more of a concept art teaser for his film that's going to be coming out at some point, Black Adam. Suicide Squad released also more of like a concept art sketches of all the characters that are going to be in the next movie that's coming out next year, which is written and directed by James Gunn. And then finally, last but not least, The Batman released its first full trailer. This is the latest version starring Robert Pattinson. It also did include a clip of Zoe Kravitz, which is a perfect tie-in for today's episode. Then there's some debate about whether or not the trailer does include Penguin, which is being played by Colin Farrell. The internet seems to think that like there's a quick shot of this like fat dude, and everyone thinks it's Colin Farrell in like a fat mask and like prosthetics, but others are not so sure. So anyways, those are the four big titles, and they released a bunch of other stuff. But one more thing, which is most pertinent for you. They released a trailer for Snyder Cut.
Oh, yeah. I didn't actually watch that one.
Okay.
Some fan I am.
What did you end up watching?
I watched the new 1984 trailer. I watched the Suicide Squad kind of fan art, not fan art, but like that art trailer, and the Batman trailer. I have to say, out of all three of those, surprisingly, I was most intrigued by the Batman trailer. And also part of me was like equal parts excited and enraged by the use of my favorite Nirvana song in the trailer. And I like saw a bit of the Twitter reaction, and it was very positive toward the use of this song, but I don't think it was ever one of their singles. And so it's one of their slower songs, and it's called Something in the Way, and it's just hands down my favorite Nirvana song. It's the one I've played on repeat the most. And I felt some sort of like weird ownership over this song just because like, it's not one of the songs that everybody, or at least I didn't think it was one of the songs that like everybody knew from them. And so like just to see it used in like a giant DC trailer was a little bit unnerving, but also it complimented the trailer really well. So I am very torn by this, but I'm curious, which trailer did you watch and like what resonated with you the most, or like did any of it appeal to you?
Yeah. Well, first I want to say that's really interesting because I am not, and we'll talk about this a little bit later, but I'm not like, I don't consider myself by any means to be a huge music aficionado. I have certain bands that I follow and been obsessed with over the years, but I guess I went deeper in certain bands than, you know, more depth and breadth kind of thing. So I had no idea that that was a Nirvana song. And if you asked me to name Nirvana songs, I would probably not be able to do many. So I think that's cool. And that'll tie in nicely with our conversation about music later. But to answer your question, I watched all of them. I think to your point, it is a little bit of the freshness in terms of the Batman trailer. I will say though that like when I was reviewing some of the Twitter conversation, everyone was like, ooh, I really like how dark the Batman is. And I'm like, guys,
it's always been like that.
What do you mean?
Christopher Nolan did it first is what I mean.
Yeah, like we're not going from Adam West to this. Like, the character has always been this way. His crusade starts when his parents get killed in front of him. Like,
he's always been angsty as fuck.
Yes, man. He's never been Mr. Sunshine. Like, that's, he's always been like the polar opposite of Superman. That's like part of the whole thing.
Yeah.
So I thought that was, I don't know, whatever. And I feel like we can have a conversation about fanboy fandom, which I feel like when it comes to comic books and when it comes to music, people can be, as we've kind of talked about in other episodes, like, can be very passionate, let's say, about it.
Mm-hmm.
But that being said, yeah, I liked it. I thought it was fine. I was most excited about Zoe Kravitz, for sure. I kept yelling,
Zoe,
for the few seconds she was on screen. And I love, you know, that we don't get the, like, reveal of her in the costume. It starts with her literally being, like, the catnapper, which is, like, very much in the character,
mm-hmm.
Which is cool. But, you know, you and I both really liked Wonder Woman, the latest one by Patty Jenkins. So I was definitely excited about 1984. Although I will say, in this new trailer, part of what they unveiled more of compared to the one that they had out previously was we see more of the Cheetah character played by Kristen Wiig.
Yeah.
My boyfriend made a really good point that I didn't even think about, but which I think was subconsciously feeling, which is that this was like a bad trailer to like come out following Cats,
because
there's like a portion where like there's kind of like two, like three different looks of Kristen Wiig we see her in her everyday, I guess she like works wherever Diana works,
mm-hmm.
Then we see her in this like rocker like outfit with like spikes. And then we see her in the more, like, full-on cheetah villain, like, outfit. And then it kind of becomes more CGI and part of her body. And there was something about it that I, like, kind of was off about that. And I think maybe that's what it was.
Yeah, you can take it seriously. I think I picked up on that, too. But for me, it was mostly that I kept thinking, like, I can't take Kristen Wiig seriously in this role. Maybe she will surprise us, but I just felt like the trailer as a whole felt kitschy as opposed to, and maybe it's supposed to because it's Wonder Woman 1984, but
yeah,
it felt sort of like cut together in an odd way, and like it didn't really make me excited to watch it, and it just kind of felt all over the place. So, I mean, I'm still definitely going to watch it. I don't think I'm going to watch it in theaters because it's supposed to be opening in October, and who knows what the state of the world in this pandemic we're in is going to be in October. I doubt there's going to be a vaccine by then. And if that's the case, I'm not risking my life to go sit in a theater. And like,
well, and like, even if it is, you and I are not going to be getting it. It's going to go to like the NFL first. And then all the rich people.
Right.
But yeah, I agree. I think you and I were both pretty geeked after the original trailer came out, especially because mm-hmm. like it unveiled the new gold suit.
Yeah.
But yeah, I have to say, I totally agree on the Kristen Wiig front. And we both love her.
Yes.
But that doesn't mean that everyone's always perfectly cast with roles. So it'll be interesting.
Yeah, it's definitely an interesting choice, for sure.
Yeah, and Suicide Squad, you and I watched it together in theaters.
Did we watch it together?
Yeah, we did.
Oh.
It was not good.
You know what? I know it's not good, but I've actually, out of all the DC movies, I've actually rewatched that one the most.
Is that because you can, like, throw it in the background and not pay attention to it?
Yeah, that's exactly why. Yeah.
So, like, I don't know. That's like a different top five, like not in a good way.
Yeah.
Good
point.
There's too many characters. Like, I was watching this trailer and I was like, I'm sorry, are these all supposed to be in one movie? Like, I know it's a squad, but like, I don't know, supposedly a lot of them are going to get killed quickly, but it's like, what's the point of like
bringing them in?
Yeah. And I don't know, maybe it's like an Avengers thing where it's like, they just want to like have all these people show up and then they'll have a slate for like 12 years because each of them is going to get a spinoff. Oh, Pete Davidson, this is what I texted you. Can't believe he's in this movie.
Yeah. But another weird cast.
Here we are.
Yeah.
Yeah. And one other thing I wanted to mention when you were talking about the music on the Batman trailer. So on the Snyder Cut, I know you haven't watched it yet, but they actually use Hallelujah.
Oh, interesting.
Which is very interesting because a lot of people observed and commented on the internet that like, hey, Hallelujah was like a really big presence in Zack Snyder's Watchmen movie, so like, how are you gonna reuse that song again on what has been such a sought after cut? Also, I don't know if you know this, but apparently the Snyder Cut is going to be 4 hours long in 1 hour parts.
Oh, they're splitting it up.
What do you mean?
They're splitting it up into 1 hour parts.
Yes, yes. So it's gonna be four 1 hour parts.
Okay. Well, I guess. Sure.
I'm not signing up for 4 hours.
Not even if it's split up into 1 hour parts?
Oh my God. Okay, well, this is a perfect segue a little bit into High Fidelity.
Yeah.
Because that movie was too long.
Way too long. Did you end up watching it? Did you end up rewatching it?
I did. Yeah. So, okay. I thought that I had seen this movie. I was wrong. I was mixing up with the Say Anything because I was like, oh, it's that John Cusack movie where he's like into music.
Oh, yeah, definitely different.
Never actually seen this movie. So yesterday or the other day was my first time seeing it. I did not realize it was 2 hours long, as I have said and will always say. If you are of the opinion, and we can have a debate about this, but if you are of the opinion that this is a rom-com, shouldn't it be longer than 90 minutes? I'm sorry. Those are just the rules, guys. I had to pause multiple times because it was dragging. I had to like check how long was left. The first time I paused was maybe like an hour left. The second time was like half an hour. And the third time was like 20 minutes. So like it took me a while to finish it, but I finished it. But that's like one of my biggest notes is that I definitely think that the TV series format benefited this a lot because I couldn't handle how long this movie was.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I had watched this movie one time before, and I think I had watched it probably when I was in high school. I think it had come on TV or whatever, and it was definitely after a long time after it had originally released, and it had kind of already gained that reputation as a cult classic by the time I watched it. And I remember I was watching it, and two-thirds of the way through, my sister was watching it with me. I remember turning to her and then just being like, I don't understand why this movie's so popular. John Cusack is a dick. And my sister just laughs at me and she goes, yeah, that's the point. And this movie was really well reviewed, but I don't get it because like, I know he's supposed to be a dick and like he's supposed to like maybe grow out of being a dick by the end, but like, he's just a dick. I don't understand why people like this movie so much. And people love this movie. It was so well reviewed when it first came out.
Yeah, I was stuck on that for a while after, like, I had to take a break in between watching the movie and watching the show. And I completely agree. Where I think I've landed, I've come around a little bit in that I read an interview with Nick Hornby and Zoe Kravitz, and she said that this was, so obviously her mother, Lisa Bonet, was in the original film mm-hmm. playing the Marie DeSalle character. The rock star musician who John Cusack's character sleeps with. She said that, you know, she watched the movie when she was 15 because her mom was in it, obviously. Then she read the book 4 years later when she was 19, and she said that it's one of her favorite books of all time. And I thought to myself, you know, she's self-aware, she's hip, she knows what's going on. Like, how could she not have the same critique? And where I ended up and what they talk about in the article is that, like, she made a playlist for Nick Hornby, and it kind of, like, got him really interested in the project. I mean, he had already sold the film, the TV rights along with the film rights. So he technically like didn't even have to be involved, but she was such a huge fan that they like struck up a conversation and like they've been sending each other playlists back and forth. But what I came to is like, it's that crux question of the movie of like, is it better to like someone for what they like or what they are like?
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like for Zoe Kravitz probably, and I'm like maybe just completely speculating here, and for a lot of people, maybe what they responded to is mostly the music nerd stuff
mm-hmm.
and mostly all of the references and like all that stuff and really getting fanboy-y on music as opposed to what I think you and I both responded to, which was what the person is like, which is that he's completely self-centered. And on your note about the growth, it's like if we're expected to somehow be impressed by the fact that the last part of the movie is that like, oh, I'm gonna make my girlfriend a playlist, which by the way, I did a scene after I like proposed to her because I felt like that was what I was supposed to do. Like that scene was awful. And by the way, why did they end it? Like, it was such an abrupt ending. Like, they had 2 hours where they like shot the shit and had all the stuff that they should have edited out, and then they just like are like, oh yeah, my dad died, can you fuck me in the car because I'm sad, I'm too sad, let's just be together. And then la-di-da, record party.
Yeah.
What?
I will say, in one of the interviews that I read or watched with Zoe Kravitz, she very intentionally says that the show is based on the book, not the movie. So maybe there is stuff in the book that the movie cut out or like wasn't, maybe the book is just better. And we can't speak to that because neither of us read the book in preparation for this podcast. But
correct. And based on how the character was, I just don't feel like I can.
Yeah, I don't think I'm. Yeah.
Even though I like Nick Hornby generally, and like a lot of his stuff has been adapted for film and TV. So I feel like we're all kind of aware of his stuff and we generally like it. But yeah, this character in particular, and that was a question of mine, like, is it obvious? Like, are we all in on the joke that he's just an asshole? Or like, you know, because there's obviously like a lot of films, and I can't think of them off the top of my head, but like there's tons of these like man-child, white, like indirect misogynist microaggression shit, you know, and these characters are beloved, especially from like, I mean, this is 2000, but like this basically felt like a 90s film. Mm-hmm. That I feel like dudes especially, and like we, you know, if you think about the world of film critics and music critics, it's all mostly men.
Yeah.
So if the people who were reviewing this stuff back then were all mostly men, it probably didn't dawn on them that this guy was an asshole.
Yeah, Peter Travers from Rolling Stone and Roger Ebert specifically, two white dudes, loved this movie. And also to your point, like the whiny white male, like that's also something that's prevalent in other Nick Hornby stories, like about a boy, but I love about a boy, so that's fine.
Yeah, I think in the case of Roger Ebert, he also is probably biased because it's based in Chicago. Well, the movie's based in Chicago.
Yeah.
I actually was reading a Chicago Tribune article with John Cusack. Apparently, they were doing like a 20-year like tour where like they were showing it in like theaters across the country this year, and he was doing like Q&A and stuff. He doesn't come across well in it to me. I'm sorry, but John Cusack doesn't. He still kind of comes across as like a dick and like very much like patting himself on the back on how much this contributed to pop culture. And like that was a conversation I was having with my boyfriend of like, tell me what, because to your point, if the show is mostly based on the book, I don't know what the movie's purpose is. Like, except for the fact that it was Jack Black's breakout film.
Yeah.
There, you know, it's not like one of those movies from the 90s or 80s where people are quoting it all the time or where like it established something. But his viewpoint was that it established the whole top five as a thing, which I guess I buy. So like, you know, fans like having conversations about top five list, but if the, which is in the book, he just said that the film like circulated the idea more, and if that's it, I don't know, I have a hard time feeling like it's something that we need to continue to put on a pedestal.
Yeah, and then maybe it's the straight to the camera thing, like the fourth wall thing, like because I don't really think I had seen that a lot before.
Yeah, and, you know, I think it works for two reasons better in the show. One is that it's obviously spread out more.
Mm-hmm.
In the movie, we have 2 hours of him just like, and he's already self-centered, right? So the fact that he's like, just completely turns to, you know, it's one of those things where like, if it wasn't a movie, you feel like this guy would just be like, thinks that the world is his audience,
right?
Kind of thing, you know? The second reason, which is the bigger reason, is that Zoe Kravitz is just way cooler than him.
Oh my god, like, yeah.
She's so much better to look at.
Yes.
She's so much more chill. And like, yes, she does start, the character starts to unravel and has that neurotic self-centeredness that the character that Rob is known for. But I like that they pull it off way more subtly and like over the course of time. Because you're like, oh, she's just way more chill. And you're like, no, she's actually like just as crazy as he is. But it's kind of a slow reveal over the course of the series, which I preferred, actually.
Yeah, she's definitely an asshole, but it's just, I feel like maybe this is biased because we're women, but I just felt like I identified with her assholeness a lot more than I identified with his. And also, but even like with that said, one of my favorite episodes of the season was when they switched to Simon and he was doing the like straight to camera narration, and like he was doing his top five breakups, which was all just that one guy. and I just thought that was refreshing for them to like break it up like that. And I'm kind of sad that there wasn't a second season, because I would have really loved an episode like that with Charisse. And I think it's really funny because I fucking, even back then, like I know that this is considered, the movie at least is considered Jack Black's breakout, like you said, but he's so fucking annoying. He's so rude to the customers. But Charisse, on the other hand, is like my favorite. And so it's just funny how like casting can like make a character so different.
Yeah, Divine Joy Randolph is absolutely perfect in the Barry Jack Black character. I was both like a little bummed that we didn't get like the big concert type of performance at the end of the show like we got in the movie, but at the same time I really liked again how they took the subtle route and they just have her with the guitar alone, especially for a character they've established as having such a big ego. For her to just have that moment where you can really see that, like, no, she really is an artist. She really loves music. And here she is just, like, with the guitar by herself singing alone in the record store at night. I thought it was so perfect. And I will say that I agree that I was bummed that we didn't get to see, like, that evolution of her trying to make it and make her music and giving her a solo episode. Because I think that would have been really cool. So I agree.
We'll talk a little bit more about the music and about the series when we come back. And we're back. So I do think one of the things I really liked about the show is that the earlier episodes definitely script-wise didn't veer too far away from the movie, but then as the show went along, it evolved and became quite different, I think. And that's when you really started to fall in love with it. The cancellation was announced maybe like 2 weeks ago. And the recent cancellation just like really hurts because it's like as soon as you get used to this world and you are really rooting for these characters and you feel like you know them, it's like over.
I think I agree. I think it's the opposite problem of Game of Thrones, where Game of Thrones and whatever people have, this might be a hot take for some people, but as soon as they went off book, it just became awful. And in this case, I do feel like, and that was one of the criticisms that people had about the show, is that it was a little bit too much. It was a little too repetitive of the movie or of the book, depending on your opinion. But I think a season two is kind of where it would have ended and would have been their blank canvas to say, okay, we're going to stay true to the characters from the book, but we get to just, you know, create our own stories. We don't have to paint by the numbers anymore. With maybe the exception, I was trying to think of what they left on the table, with maybe the exception of like the top five careers or dream jobs at the end of the movie, they pretty much lifted everything from the movie. They even included a scene that was cut from the movie that was shot for the movie, but was ultimately cut before the final edit. And they included that in the series. So
what was that?
So it's episode five where, it's the personal record collection.
Parker Posey. Yeah, I was wondering if that was. I loved that sequence. I loved that entire thing.
Same. Parker Posey was perfectly cast. I don't know the actor's name, but he was perfectly cast as the husband at the Clyde Hotel. And I mean, you know, talking about the history of the Clyde Hotel, Jake Lacy, as we were kind of texting about, he is like the new James Marsden. And I don't mean that in a good way. I really hope he doesn't just get like stuck in this like nice guy thing. He does it really well. He either plays like the maybe Republican or like the very, hey, I'm like a white guy, but cool. Which I like get the vibe from like AOC's boyfriend, not to like tangent, but anyways, and whatever, it like hasn't gone horribly for James Marsden, but even in Westworld, he plays that guy.
Yeah.
He played it in The Office. He played it in Obvious Child. He played it in Girls. At one point, Charisse calls him the vest, which I thought was funny.
Yeah, that was really funny. I'm just going to keep referencing him as Fran.
No, Fran is a good reference. Yeah.
Yeah. Fran is the character he played on Girls. And so in my head, he will forever be known as Fran to me. This is a flaw of mine because even Chris Pratt, I still only think of him as Bright Abbott from Everwood. So, and even like Jonathan Jackson, who's like, who knows what he's doing these days, but he will always be Lucky from General Hospital. Ugh. So
the original Liz and Lucky.
Yes. Yes.
In the spirit of top five celebrity heartbreak. So I think like everyone, well, not everyone, but I think you and I can agree Ryan Gosling and Rachel McAdams are on there. We actually talked about this offline, like the last episode. I don't personally buy into the JT Brittany because I just feel like he's just, I'm not a fan of his right now anymore.
Yeah.
Even though I'm a fan, I feel like I'm more a fan of Britney these days. I'm much more a fan of hers because of the conservatorship these days than him. But I feel like most people would put that on the top five celebrity heartbreak list. I bring it up because you mentioned Chris Pratt. I feel like a lot of people might throw Anna Faris and Chris Pratt on that list.
Yeah.
Who would be on yours?
I think what would be easier for me is to name the couples, like, if they broke up.
Yeah, sure.
Now I would be, like, fucking devastated, and I think it would be Jason Momoa and Lisa Bonet to bring it back to that family, because, like, that's just such a good-looking couple. John Krasinski and Emily Blunt, like, if they break up, then I think love is dead.
So the one that I would say that, like, I'd be sad, but, like, I also wouldn't be surprised, John Legend and Chrissy Teigen.
Oh my God, I really, really don't want them to break up. Yeah, they're definitely one.
I know. Here's why I say that, is because there's been, like, a hashtag couple goals, like, jinx, I feel like. And so, like, when Chris Pratt had all those videos, like, going around, he was, like, braiding his daughter's hair or whatever. And everyone's like, oh my God, couple goals. Yeah, guess what happened to them? They died, and then he married a Kennedy, like, a year later, and now they have a child. So, just saying, guys, be careful with those hashtag couple goals.
Well, oh, and also Kristen Bell and Dax Shepard. Like, if they broke up, I'd be really upset because they seem like they're really happy.
Yeah, and really happy because they, like, really worked through stuff. So I feel like, yeah, that would be, like, a sad testament to, like, you can really work hard at this stuff and it still doesn't work.
Yeah, and it's clear that they have had problems. They've been honest about that. But yeah, like, to your point, they do seem to, like, be committed to actually working stuff out, which is, I think, very mature.
Yeah, if anyone wants to hear, like, really interesting, like, relationship episodes, I would listen to the two that she's on his show. Especially the first one, it was really interesting. So
yeah. And then Penelope Cruz and Javier Bardem, another one that's just like,
I like forget that they're together every now and then.
I do too, but then when I remember, I'm like, god damn, that's a good looking couple. Like,
yeah.
And Rachel Weisz and Daniel Craig, even though there was some drama there, right?
Oh, is there?
There was, like, I think that they were, like, not childhood sweethearts, but, like, they had, like, met her when they were, like, in theater school or something, and they had become friends. And then I think Rachel Weisz was with Darren Aronofsky. She was engaged to Darren Aronofsky, and then she, like, broke it off to go be with Daniel Craig.
Huh.
Which, yeah.
Interesting. Okay.
I might be getting some of the details wrong, but that's what I remember.
Well, that was a good tangent. Sorry, I just had to work that in there. So I guess, like, maybe we're doing this out of order, but we should just, like, do a couple of, like, bits about the original one just to kind of give the lay of the land. So this was about a music junkie and record store owner, Rob, who's still reeling from a recent heartbreak. And an effort to process his relationship troubles, he decides to revisit his top five heartbreaks of all time to figure out what went wrong. Throughout his expedition, he blunders through conversations with old lovers, new hookups, and many conversations with his record store cohorts about their shared passion, music. So the book was released in 1995. It was Nick Hornby's debut novel. It was set in London. And then the movie was adapted for the book in 2000, reset in Chicago, starring John Cusack, as we've mentioned, Lisa Bonet, Jack Black, and Catherine Zeta-Jones.
I totally forgot she was in this until I was watching it. And I was like, oh, of course she's that character. Of course.
Yeah. So she plays, how would you describe her character?
Well, I don't remember her name, but she plays kind of like the too cool one that got away because John Cusack was clearly out of his league. And she is just so beautiful and so laissez-faire about everything that he kind of describes himself as being, like, incredibly insecure and thinking that she's going to leave him for somebody else. And then he's like, and then of course she does. So
Charlie, number three on his
list. Yes. Charlie was her. Yes.
Very, like, sophisticated and worldly. I kind of got the same vibes as the Tia Carrera character in Wayne's World. It's like this. He also uses the word exotic too much in the movie, which offended me. Just saying, putting it out there. This was sort of like post her breakout, if you consider Zorro her breakout in 1998.
Zorro, yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And then interestingly, they were both reunited just the next year. Maybe they were filming simultaneously, who knows, in a film that did juggernauts at the box office, but I didn't watch it. I don't know anybody who watched.
America's Sweetheart? I watched movie.
Was it good?
No, it's like one of the worst movies ever made.
$64 million budget, $138 million at the box office for this film. 138.
Because the hype was so
insane.
Loud. It was insane. It was because it was Julia Roberts and Catherine Zeta-Jones and John Cusack. And
yeah, we were starting to get like towards like the death of like the rom-com era.
It was the height of all of their fame too. Like they were all coming off of like major successes. And so I think there was just so much hype surrounding this movie. Like I vividly remember it. And then I was like so excited to go see it. And I like went to see it in the theater. And then I just remember being like, why? Like it was one of the worst movies ever made. And I think at one point I even like owned it. I had the DVD of it.
Oof. Okay. Shame on you, you know, first time fools on them, but you know, you buy the DVD, shame's, you know, on you. Sorry.
I don't know how I got the DVD.
You know what?
I just know that I had
it's
it.
It's probably, here's probably what it was. You know, the Blockbuster used to have those like $3 sales.
Oh.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Cause I had a lot of those, like, and I love her, but like I had that Penelope movie. Not a good movie.
I hate that movie.
But see, I had that movie because of that Blockbuster sale. So we all make mistakes.
I just also think I had a weird fixation with Catherine Zeta-Jones at the time. Like, I remember...
Totally makes sense. She's hot.
She's so hot. And, like, I even made my... I just told this to my friend the other day, and I think I told you this offline, too, because we're planning our Halloween episodes, and we want to do an episode on Haunting of Hill House. And I had watched one of the remakes. There's a film remake that came out, like, in the 90s or early aughts, starring Owen Wilson and Catherine Zeta-Jones. And I dragged my sister to go see it. And I remember my sister was, like, trying to convince me to... She was like, are you sure you don't want to go see Model Behavior with Justin Timberlake? And I was like, no, I want to go see this horror movie. And I'm pretty sure it was because I was obsessed with Catherine Zeta-Jones. And it was a huge mistake because I couldn't sleep for days after that because it was like, I'm sure if I rewatched it now, it wouldn't be scary. But for like a kid, it was really, really scary. I'm pretty sure somebody hangs themselves. Oh my God. Also, weirdly, both Catherine Zeta-Jones and... John Cusack's Rebound Girl, I think, are in the Haunting of Hill House movie.
What?
Remember the one that's like the woman that he hooks up with right after Charlie, I think? The one that's like kind of sad.
Oh, Sarah. Whoever plays Sarah. Sarah is the character.
Yeah. So they're both in this movie.
Okay.
So yeah, I had a weird thing for Catherine Zeta-Jones back in the day.
Hey, man. I love Zorro, you know, for a lot of reasons, but one of them is Catherine Zeta-Jones.
She's so pretty in that. Like, I don't think I've ever seen anybody on film as pretty as that.
Gorgeous.
Mm-hmm.
But speaking of, Zoe Kravitz just looks amazing in this. Like, she's like top five fashion, I'd say. Top five, like, fashion I wish I could pull off.
Yeah. Everything just, like, looks so effortlessly cool on her.
Yeah.
And it's just, like, some people can do that. And, oh, but you know what was, like, really funny is that when her friend, the girl who's playing the new version of Charlie in this series,
yes,
when they're at that Instagram,
yes,
influencer,
yes,
dinner, and she's like, oh, you have to put on this jacket. And then Zoe Kravitz is like, I don't think it's my style. And she's like, no, you have one of those figures that can, like, pull anything off. And, of course, it's, like, the one thing she looks fucking ridiculous in. And I just thought that was, like, really funny.
Yeah. Also, did you enjoy the line about the Korean money in that episode?
I don't remember it. Refresh my memory.
So they're at this, Zoe Kravitz's character, she's at this party with her ex trying to figure out what's going on or what went wrong. And she's sitting down next to this chick and finds out that this is an Instagram influencer party. She says, you know, I wouldn't come to the ship, but we're getting paid so much to hawk this soju shit. Korean money runs deep. I just thought that was really funny.
I didn't catch the Korean money runs deep thing. I did remember the soju reference, which I thought was funny.
Yeah. I will say that this was, first I should say that this was this adaptation for the TV show. The showrunners were both female. And I felt like you could feel that. It was also very self-aware in general, not just on gender, but also on race and money for the most part, because every time I had a question and that I like a rant that I screamed out loud while watching the show, they answered it. So, like there's a scene where Simon's getting coffee and it costs, like, you could hear the background, and then it costs like $8.50. And I was like, it does not cost $8.50. And then like she calls him out on it and says like $8.50 for coffee is crazy. And then when we first see the character Clyde, played by Jake Lacy, he has a car. And I was like, who the fuck has a car in New York? And then later when she's trying to find someone to give her a ride to the Upper West Side, I forget. I think it's Charisse that says, yo, what fucking dickhead owns a car in New York City? I just feel like they were just like very in tune with like what the show is, you know?
Yeah, yeah, and how people will respond to it. I will say, and I know we've talked about this in past episodes, this show did make me miss New York. Like, there is sort of like that grimy summer bodega version of New York that I love, and this is basically just that. It made me miss it really, really badly.
Yeah, and I think more so than, because we talked about this last with The Sun Is Also a Star, that was like a one day thing where we're following mostly two characters, where in this we really get to kind of like be a part of their daily lives and you get all that kind of like more quote unquote mundane stuff, but which I think is more interesting, where it's like, where do you, what's your local bodega? Like, what's your relationship like with your local bodega guy? Like, she has like a, yeah, she has like a password that, you know, she gave him so that he wouldn't sell her cigarettes. And he's like, oh, you're smoking again? You know, it's like all those, and she like seems to know everyone in the neighborhood. And so does Simon. I feel like there's just lots of like random, like, hey, what's up? You know, kind of stuff where you really feel, yeah, like these characters are living in the neighborhood. And I just, yeah, I totally agree. And, you know, it's just a lot of those shots where it's like clearly like, I don't know, it feels like this was very much like a summer show. Mm-hmm. And where you're just taking these really long walks outdoors because it's like, why not? It's cool enough outside and you can walk from wherever that hotel party was on her birthday to, I don't think she walked all the way to Crown Heights, by the way, but like, yeah, you can walk across the bridge at least.
Yeah. Yeah, I was surprised that she was walking that far.
That was one thing that they didn't clarify, but I was like, it's fine, I'll let it go.
Yeah, and at the same time, that's just something that I personally would never do and couldn't do, so it's just not something that I can like relate to or have any sort of opinion about.
The other random gripe that I had is that Rob still has a landline cord phone in 2020. Sorry, that's a no. That's this.
Oh, she does?
Yes. When
that's
she
weird.
When she calls Kevin Bannister and gets his mom, she's calling on a landline cord phone. That's a no for me.
I was also kind of like, when exactly is this supposed to be set? I was confused because of the record store thing and because of the Facebook reference, and then there's that weird Instagram influencer thing. I felt like it could have been set like in either like the mid to early aughts, like, or right now? Is it
no, something? you see her iPhone, and it's definitely like a newer version. So
are there enough nostalgic hipsters in Brooklyn? I mean, I guess this is a stupid question because like probably, but are there enough nostalgic hipsters in Brooklyn to like make a record store solvent?
If they're now selling vinyl records at Urban Outfitters, the answer is yes.
Oh my God.
They have an entire section. They've had it for like at least a year. That's how bad it is. It's also now at like fucking like not Borders. It's at Barnes and there's like a vinyl section of Barnes and Noble now. There's been like articles written about the whole like vinyl resurgence and all that stuff. So I kind of buy it. But at the same time, that's another gripe. How is she paying for her apartment? Again, the eternal set in New York question. It's obviously her parents, right? Or her mom. Because how? She has two employees. She has prime real estate in Brooklyn. She has like this relatively big apartment to herself. Like, no.
Well, she keeps, it's very Carrie Bradshaw-esque in that she keeps complaining about not having any money, and yet her lifestyle does not suggest as if she does not have any money. Like, yeah. Even like her go when they go to the Carlisle and she's like, cheap whiskey, and then she like sees the bill and she's like, fuck, I thought I said cheap, and then she pays for it anyway. Like,
yeah, but I will say that I did like how they tied those two threads together of her getting the record that Fran got for her,
mm-hmm,
and using it to pay for Charisse's guitar, kind of as a, sorry, I fucked up, dude. And it was also realistic because it's like, yeah, how the fuck are you? Before they did the reveal, I was like, wait, how did you get her this guitar? So
yeah,
that made a little bit more sense.
So sweet. I mean, I feel like a big through line in our show so far has been that this theme of like remaking or rebooting white shows with white centric characters and recasting them with people of color. And in this version of this show, I feel like it's so much richer and more complicated, and the characters feel so much more like fleshed out because they're people of color, just because they have more complicated perspectives and things, but I also found it refreshing that race really wasn't a barrier in like her and Rob and Fran's relationship, or like Mac and Lily's relationship. Like nobody mentions anything about it. And I think the only time Rob mentions anything about her race or like alludes to it is when she's breaking up with the girl who plays Charlie, and she's outside that window and she has that monologue where she's like, she definitely has a type and it's definitely white.
Yeah.
And so I just thought that was like nice. The race of each character definitely added to their depth, but they didn't have to like overtly have the show be about race and or mention it too much. And I just wonder, like, what was your kind of reaction to this kind of casting?
Yeah, and I think most of the time when it's done wrong is like when they're literally copying and pasting it and they're not absorbing the context of how a person's race or gender can change the story. Not change the story per se, because this like on paper is pretty much exactly how it was in the movie and the book, and in like a plot summary kind of way, with a few exceptions where they're like conflating two different characters.
Mm-hmm.
But like, for example, if you were like, oh, they should have like a black Emma. No, that doesn't make any sense. Like it just doesn't make any sense. This, I feel like, held on to the trademarks of who Rob is, which is that Rob is self-centered, is obsessed with music, is obsessed with like how to craft a playlist and all that stuff. But this Rob Robin is completely different. Her world is different. How she moves through it is completely different. Like her persona, just her vibe is totally different. And I agree that it didn't feel like race was like overtly needed to be like a, hey, look at us, we're a diverse show. But I feel like they did it again in much more subtle ways, where they gave Simon that whole episode, like you said. And we, much like I think the character Max in Happy Endings did really well in terms of offering a different perspective of kind of like the, against the prototypical gay character of Jack from Will and Grace, which I feel like was a lot of people's first mainstream media kind of consumption of a gay person.
Mm-hmm.
Just kind of like watched him live his life, and it wasn't like a big thing like, oh, this is like, they didn't have like a coming out episode, right? It was just like, oh, I'm Simon, I'm gay, but I also deal with like lots of regular things, like is my boyfriend ashamed of me, you know, feelings of not being good enough, all that stuff, being insecure, like that, none of that had to do with his orientation or the fact that he was a man. You know, in a lot of ways, him and Rob are very similar. And I think when they did mention race, to your point, it felt organic and like funny.
Mm-hmm.
So the other reference I could think of is when Fran and her are hanging out at a bar and she's like giving him shit for liking fish. And he's like, you know, I'm white, right? And like they have like a funny joke about it. And it's like,
yeah,
that feels realistic, you know? It's not like they have this white dude who's like, oh yeah, man, like fucking like Jay-Z, Bob Marley, like whatever. I don't even know. But you know, he's true to who that character you feel like you would meet in New York who's white. So I agree. I think that they handled it well, and I definitely think that it gave the characters much more depth. The fact that you mentioned her brother, Cameron. I love that she gave him a brother. And they just did what a TV show should really do, building off from a movie, is really expanding that world more, adding in more layers, more characters, and you really feel like you're getting to know this person's whole world. And I really liked that, their dynamic as well.
I think one of the things that made me even more sad about the cancellation is, and this is kind of just harkening back to what you said before about Jack and Will and Grace and subverting that stereotype of what a gay man likes, and the fact that Simon is a gay man, but he also loves punk music. I think I saw in an article when people were kind of grieving the cancellation of this show, one of the viewers was like, I'm a gay man and I love punk, and I just had not seen that on TV before. It was just like a nice that they made these characters like fully fleshed human beings with different interests and like quirks, and like they were really fully formed.
Yeah, and I, to kind of continue on that point, I thought it was really funny how they like made all of his roommates like a different type of gay. Like you felt like there was, you know, you get to really see that, like, hey, in any world there's going to be different types. It's not like, you know, gays are not a monolith. You know, we're both Asian American, but we're not the same, right? And so you deal with that no matter what, and you can feel like an outsider even in a community where you're all outsiders, right? Which I think was interesting and funny to see. And I mean, to that point, we didn't even mention the fact that like we've been talking about it so nonchalant and matter of fact that like we didn't even mention that, like, hey, they made Rob have a woman as part of her top five heartbreaks, right? Like that in and of itself, having two characters that are, you know, sexually fluid. I mean, Simon does say, it seems like he identifies fully as homosexual, but Rob never says anything, but clearly she, you know, she was dating a woman for over a year and all that stuff. And, you know, that felt completely natural. I don't feel like that felt stunted or like checkboxy at all. And again, it was because they handled it that way, right? It's kind of like a matter of, you know, act as if kind of mentality to the show that a lot of other shows do. And when they do it that way, I much prefer it than when they call attention and say, hey, here's our special episode.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, I really appreciated that. And I am sad that they didn't give it a season two, considering everything else that's out there right now.
We're going to take a quick break, but after we come back, we're going to talk a little bit more about the cancellation and maybe the all-time top five most memorable TV heartbreaks.
If we have the strength to talk about them.
And we're back.
What else does Hulu have on its slate right now? Why couldn't they pick this up? Also, who should pick it up? My vote would be HBO Max.
I think HBO Max should pick it up for sure. It would be such a fuck you to Hulu. And it's funny because Zoe Kravitz recently threw some major shade at Hulu. And she made a comment that said, I guess like a bunch of her celebrity friends were commenting their condolences on her Instagram posts, which basically had a bunch of cast photos. And then she was just sort of reminiscing and saying, like, breakups suck, but I love you guys. And in response to one of the condolences comments, she said, it's cool. At least Hulu has a ton of other shows starring women of color we can watch. Oh, wait. And it just was like a subtle, like very, I guess not so subtle burn. And yeah, like they really don't have any, I can't think of a single one, but I also don't really pay attention to their slate a ton. Do you?
Okay, so as someone, no, I don't. Not like intentionally, just kind of through what everyone else is talking about. I know people have been talking about The Great. I know, is Handmaid's Tale still going on?
I think it maybe? Is.
I think there was like a season four trailer where people were talking about it, so that's there. When this cancellation was announced, the thing that people were griping about was like, oh, they gave Dollface season two, but not High Fidelity.
Yeah, that's fucking weird. That's fucking weird.
Shrill, Rammy, Pen 15, fine, all fine. That's it, though. That's it. Unless I'm missing something.
Well, also, they gave Light as a Feather season two.
I don't even know what that is.
It's like a weird, okay, so I watched all of it because you know, I love teen shows. It's like a Pretty Little Liars, like, teen show, and it has Liana Liberato in it, who I love. But it's not a good show. Like, it's just not good. That got a season two, and I just don't, but I was listening to The Watch the week that this show got canceled, and they were kind of speculating that the cancellation is largely COVID induced because they just couldn't figure out how to film in New York right now, which I guess would be fair, but it was also all conjecture and speculation, so like I guess we'll just never know.
I don't buy that, sorry. Like, you can have a show on contract and like get there are ways around that. That's bullshit. Sorry, I don't buy that argument at all. Not a single bit. That's garbage. If you want it bad enough and you like, here's the thing, like, as a slight tangent, but I think it's relevant. Like, Comedy Central, as we've talked about, is doing all of these animated reboots. They're doing Ren and Stimpy, Clone High, and a Daria reboot, spinoff, I should say. All of this is predicated on this huge, like, rejiggering of their strategy, where they're only focusing on things that can be turned into movies or is adult animation. So things that they have already renewed, they've reneged on them. So Tosh.0, Drunk History, canceled after being renewed. However, they're keeping RuPaul. And the reason I say all that is, like, you make it work. Like, even if you announce, like, as a company, not just Comedy Central, but, like, as your core brands that, like, you only want to focus on certain things, if you know something is culturally, you're getting cachet and cultural, like, credit pop cultural and zeitgeist from a show, you're going to make it work. But if you aren't paying attention to it and you don't think it's valuable, you won't do that. So all that to say that I feel like if people were paying attention to the show and they saw the value in it or saw the potential, at least, they would have kept it. I think that's the other fucked up thing about shows that have minority leads and more diverse, like in front of the camera or behind the camera, they're not allowed to fail, right? Like we talked about this a lot of times. It's hard enough to even get a shot, but you have to be perfect. You have to be perfect to get a chance, to get a second chance. Because it's like, if you fuck up, they're like, oh, see, you proved us right.
This is what I don't understand, though. Like, it, out of every Hulu show that I've watched, like, up until this point, even, like, through the very beginning, this is, I mean, I never watched Handmaid's Tale because I don't love dystopian things. They stress me out. And so, like, I just refuse to watch that. But barring that, like, this is definitely the best show out of the ones that I've watched that they've done to date. And it's also been the most, I mean, it was really well received critically. Zoe Kravitz is like one of the coolest, most hottest people alive. And she's like having a moment right now, like, especially with her being in the new Catwoman and everything. And she was before with Big Little Lies and everything as well. So like, I just don't understand the math that they did to come to this conclusion. I don't get it. And it just makes me sad because it had so much potential and it was so refreshing and endearing. And like, you just like, as soon as you fall in love with the characters, they're like, oh, okay, bye. See you never again. And you're just like, fuck, I just invested all this time. And you're finally like getting to somewhere that is new and exciting and different from what the movie was, and now you're gonna fucking pull the plug. I totally understand why people are so upset over this.
So here's where I think they should just double down and like just embrace as their niche, right? Because they've been struggling like ever since they got into the original programming of like, okay, first they were obsessed with like Chasing House of Cards, which once they got Handmaid's Tale after like 5 years, they finally got it. So they like broke that bubble. They didn't have to be like insecure about that anymore. Congratulations. But they still weren't really like good at any one thing. They just like invested enough and like placed bets and like finally one of them paid off. Mm-hmm. But where I think they've really shined recently is their limited miniseries based on books. They're great with the one and dones. Normal People, Little Fires Everywhere, people love that shit. Maybe they should just do that. Maybe they're just not the home for episodic. I mean, I guess Rami and Pen 15, like maybe it's like a hybrid of like limited miniseries based on books and like breaking ground with like brand new emerging voices. Mm-hmm. Something, some combination like that. But outside of that, they just don't seem like they know what to do with these things.
Yeah, they really don't. So I was reading a Pop Sugar article that was lamenting the cancellation of this show, and it inspired me to include another kind of top five list. And the top five list that this article mentions is the all-time top five most memorable heartbreaks of television, in which the author of this Pop Sugar article now lists High Fidelity being canceled as one of them. So I thought it would be fun for us to go through our personal all-time top five most TV heartbreaks. Are you ready for this?
I am, although I don't have like five, but I was trying to brainstorm, but we can just, yeah. I'll let you go first.
Okay, I have five, and it can be either canceled too soon or different scenes, because like I did a mix of both things. My first one is a canceled too soon, and that was Freaks and Geeks, which is a perfect one season show, but it's also just like, it was a perfect show and it deserved another chance, and fucking love that show. I'm just like, I'm still not over it being gone. There are so many heartbreaks of Grey's Anatomy that have happened since like the 14, 15 years I've been watching it. And I don't know why I keep watching it, but I do. I am current. I have watched every single episode many multiple times, but I don't get why, because I feel like that show has emotionally abused me throughout the years.
This is like that scene in Mean Girls where it's like, raise your hand if you've been emotionally abused by Grey's Anatomy. And like, everyone raises their hand.
And everybody raises their hand. Like, it's just the worst. And I think when it started to really go downhill was obviously McDreamy dying.
Oh, I bailed before that.
Fucking get over that. I don't think I'll ever get over that. And then recently they did like total botch job of Alex Karev leaving the show. And it was fucking the most out of character, terrible goodbye show I've ever fucking viewed in my whole life, and so bad. So like, I can't even pick one out of the two because they're both terrible. And I don't understand why I keep watching this show, but I will until it ends. And that's my second one. My third one, I had like originally put for this one, the death of Rita on Dexter, because that was a really tough situation for me. However, I ended up replacing it with the Cory Monteith tribute episode on Glee, which always makes me cry, and it is very emotional. And also now with everything that's happened with Naya Rivera, is even more sad. That poor cast like can't catch a break. Although Lea Michele did recently have her baby, congratulations to her.
And Jenna Ushkowitz is engaged.
Aw, that's cute. Happy for her, even though, you know, Lea Michele, we hope you're getting behavioral therapy. And then number four is like also a two-parter, which is the Buffy episode, The Body, which was part of season 5, which was, I think, one of the best episodes of Buffy. It was when Buffy's mom dies. And also, I will pair that with the end of the WB in general.
R.I.P.
The WB was a fucking big deal to me growing up. And my sister used to torment me when I was younger and like lie to me and say that the WB was ending and I would start crying. And then it actually like happened. And obviously the CW was born and the content, I guess you could say, is not that different, but it feels different to me. Like there was a golden era of the WB and it is no longer.
Which lives in that one promo that you've sent me a few times.
Yeah, I mean, there are two versions of that promo, but yes, for sure. That promo was like a whole series. And it's the one that we're talking about is like the one where like the cast of Charmed and the cast of Buffy and like the cast of Gilmore Girls and the cast of Popular, they're like all together and they're all just having a party basically.
Yeah, they're at a party.
It's the cutest thing ever. It's so cute.
On the lot. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think Gilmore Girls cast is actually in like one of the later ones. They're not in the one of the earlier ones because I don't think Gilmore Girls and Popular were like on together, but you know, you get what I mean. And then the last one is an episode of something that I have not seen fully, but it is something that has like gained notoriety on the internet, and that I actually saw this scene for the first time on Will Smith's Inside the Actor Studio. And it's the scene where Will's father leaves him and he basically cries to Uncle Phil and asks him why his father doesn't want him. And it's so sad. So those are my top 5.
All right. Mine's going to like take different approaches because I'm kind of like doing half of these on the fly. But the most straightforward answer would be happy endings. You know, it got 3 seasons, which nowadays maybe is considered a lot. It wasn't like a full one and done, but it definitely was one of those underdog shows that ABC kind of buried. I'm pretty sure they threw it on a Friday at some point in the schedule, that I really, really loved. A lot of people love. It's one of those like has a smaller, it's kind of like the Community fandom, but on like a smaller scale, I feel like.
Yeah.
They recently did a reunion and did some like raise money for COVID, and it was a really funny episode, probably one of the best cast reunion COVID episodes I've seen. I just love all the cast members. They have incredible chemistry and they were just all like on the same wavelength, you can tell, like comedically.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And they drew out the characters so well. Yeah, they're just fantastic. So that's number one.
I love happy endings too. Yeah, it's a good one.
I'll say that, and I already kind of spoiled it for you. So I feel like I'm allowed to talk about it now, but this is definitely kind of recency bias, but Schitt's Creek, there is a couple. There's a couple that makes a very adult, mature decision to no longer be with one another, and it is absolutely heartbreaking. It's so beautiful and so just real, and kills me just thinking about it. So I won't dwell on that further, but that's my number two.
Tear.
And then, okay, this one is a heartbreak because it's one of those shows that I really loved and then it went bad. So it's one of those heartbreaks where you're like, wow, I used to like you and now you're just like an asshole, you know?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
How I Met Your Mother.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Woo! That show, and sorry, this is a perfect segue, not segue, but like a good time to reference, this episode is a good time to reference it, because Ted Mosby and Rob Brooks are on my top five, like, whiny ass white men who are obsessed with women and sometimes not, like, with women loving them and not, like, in good ways, if there is a good way. I got some Ted Mosby vibes when I was watching this movie in all the bad ways. Because they're so fucking obsessed. And you know what? They're never fucking satisfied. Ted Mosby is convinced the first time he meets Robin that she's like the one. And guess what, guys? Like, yeah, she ends up being the one, but there's also another one before that. And she only comes back because she dies. So like, yeah.
But also the whole time he doesn't listen to her. She's very clear about what she wants and that she doesn't want to be in a serious relationship and she wants to focus on her career. And he just completely ignores her. And it's just like... And also, to your point with Rob and the girlfriend he had in high school, he breaks up with her because she won't have sex with him.
And then, no, that's not even the worst part, is that then they meet up again and she's like, oh yeah, by the way, that guy that you heard I hooked up with, I only hooked up with him because I was so heartbroken by you. And I kind of didn't really want to sleep with him, but I felt pressured to. And I was so emotionally distraught that I did it. And then I couldn't have sex in college for many years after because I was so like shook up about it.
Yeah.
So like he basically
traumatized her
in a way, was like the domino for sexual trauma. So like how right. fucked up is that? And he cheats on his pregnant girlfriend. I guess he didn't know she was pregnant at the time, but still.
Yeah, he's the worst. Oh yeah, and she even says, that girlfriend even says in their conversation that like it wasn't rape, but just short of.
Yes.
And you're just like, ugh.
Ridiculous.
What the fuck?
Anyways, these guys are obsessive. And even when they have, like, great girls, they either, like, get insecure about it or they're, like, hung up on one of them. Because there were so many girls that Ted Mosby, like, meets and, like, starts dating. And you're like, yeah, she's so perfect. And then he ends up being like, oh, but they're not Robin. And it's like, are you fucking kidding me, man? Anyways, I just started to hate that show so much and it angered me. And I definitely like hate watched it. And it just, that's a different kind of heartbreak.
It just didn't make sense. Like it just did a lot of things that I feel like Grey's Anatomy is doing now and Game of Thrones did at the end. It's like all of this stuff that you're forcing these characters to do are so out of character and totally opposite to the development that you've been building for them over the course of years.
Yeah, Barney should have ended up with Quinn, the stripper.
Yes.
But instead, yes. They forced the Robin thing. And then they broke them up. And it's like, are you fucking kidding me? Okay. I have two more left. I'm on 4 and 5. So I'm going to choose these other two ones for different reasons. Okay, so the next one is one we've referenced on a different episode. And it's Wishbone. This was the first time that I like think I started understanding what TV was, which is that it wasn't like this everlasting, like constantly generates new content. And that at some point it just stops. Like at some point they just stop producing new episodes. Because like, and there like, I guess there was TV Guide back then, but you know, PBS syndicated stuff like isn't really tracked the same way as you would normally track normal TV shows with like seasons and episodes, especially kids programming. So it's like, there wasn't a way to find out if there's new episodes. I would just keep tuning in every afternoon and it would be a repeat. And I'm like, wait, it's been weeks of repeats. There's no new episodes. And so that was like one of my first few lessons of like, oh, this ends eventually.
Oh, the heartbreak.
It's sad, but now it's getting a reboot like 20 years later or whatever. So number 5, another heartbreak for a different reason, but also somewhat relevant because it's coming back into the conversation for some reason. Secret Garden. Now, this is the movie, The Secret Garden.
Uh-huh.
So I never watched the movie. And the heartbreak is that I was supposed to watch it with my mom. We made like a date to see it at the theater. And then for some reason, like I took a nap. And then when I woke up, I was like, oh, aren't we going to watch the movie? And she's like, oh, we missed it. I'm like, what do you mean we missed it? And like, I was like distraught.
Why didn't you wake me up?
Yes, that's basically what I said. Now, it's unclear why we just didn't pick another day to see it, why I never rented it on video to this day. I've never seen the movie. But I could vividly remember waking up from that nap and being like, oh, my God. I don't know why. At the time, I just like, oh, this is my one chance to see that movie. And I just never saw it. And so there's been like articles recirculating because I guess it's like maybe streaming somewhere now. And I just like can't, like part of me wants to watch it and kind of like fill that gap in my heart or whatever. But part of me is like, it's too soon. Even though it's been like 20 years. So it's the heartbreak of never seeing a thing that you really, really, really wanted to see.
That's fair. That actually, I have dreams about that though, actually, that are kind of like that are just like you sleep through something that you really wanted to do, but you missed it. Yeah. So I kind of get that. I really do. Especially when you're younger and you don't really have control over your own schedule.
Oh yeah. I just felt betrayed. Like, hey, you're like my, not my person in the Grey's Anatomy way, but like you're my person. You're just like, wake me up for this shit. You know what I mean? And then like, I'd say there's like a ton of smaller honorable mentions, some of them which you mentioned. Popular, I fucking loved that show.
I love that show too.
Sad when they canceled it. Sarah Connor Chronicles, which I've mentioned on another episode. Secret Circle, which we've already talked about in another episode. And then I'll put these two in there, even though I haven't seen them, but they have a specific purpose. Selfie and Flash Forward. And the reason why...
Wait, Flash Forward, the show with Jewel State and Ben Foster?
Well, they also have another cast member, which is John Cho, which is why both of those shows I referenced.
Cho is in Flash Forward?
If it's the one I'm thinking of, it was on ABC. He was like love interest with Gabrielle Union. He was an FBI agent.
No. We're thinking of two different shows.
Okay. Well, I'm picking Selfie and Flash Forward because John Cho deserves to be a leading man on a TV show, and he never got that chance. Although I guess he was in that, like, he was on some like horror thing on Fox, but, you know, like supporting or whatever. He deserves to be a leading romantic man.
He does. He's been in the business for so long, and he's very charming and likable. I don't understand why he's, like, relegated now. He was great in Searching.
Yeah, I wanted to see that.
It was really good.
Also, Columbus? There's some, like, movie about, like, when he goes back to his hometown that looked really good that I didn't see.
All right, is there anything else you want to say about High Fidelity?
Oh my god, there's so much. I'm just gonna, like, go on a quick rant. So, speaking of movies that were movies and TV shows that were also books, there's a few other ones. Some of them I knew, some of them I didn't. Watchmen, we knew, we've talked about. Handmaid's Tale, didn't know that was a movie. Hannibal.
What?
Obviously.
Handmaid's Tale was a movie?
Apparently. 1990.
Oh, weird.
MASH was a movie, apparently, and a book. Didn't know that.
Mm-hmm.
Did you know that Friday Night Lights was a book?
Yeah.
I didn't know that. I knew there was a movie, but I didn't realize there was a book, and it's like... not totally surprising given like the subject matter, but still, I didn't know it was like a triple adaptation.
Mm-hmm.
I also wanted to say that I really enjoyed a few quotes in both the movie and the TV show that were both unique to each of them. In the TV show, I forget who says it, but someone says, "I felt like a woman in a Michael Bay movie," which was fantastic.
Oh yeah, that was really funny.
Also, two quotes from the movie that surprisingly didn't make it into the TV show, considering they lifted pretty much everything from the movie. And both of them belong to Lisa Bonet, Zoe Kravitz's mom. The first one is, "I think it's okay if you feel horny and fucked up at the same time." And then the second one was, "I'm not gonna let that asshole come between me and a fuck." Great quotes. Didn't make it into the TV show. Just wanted to mention that.
Feeling like a female in a Michael Bay movie came right after the hotel scene. And when she realizes Parker Posey's ex-husband is, or her husband really is a dick. And because he like doesn't acknowledge her the whole time.
They didn't speak.
Yeah. So Robin says it. Or Rob.
Did you know that John Cusack co-wrote the screenplay?
Oh yeah. I just read that on IMDb though. And I read that because they had Jack Black in mind for the role as they were writing it.
Oh,
yeah.
That's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
I will also say we didn't really talk about music that much, but I felt like the music in part of also why I couldn't really connect with the movie was that it did feel very specifically like white rock. Mm-hmm. Like, A, it was music elitist, which I already have a problem with because I'm not like an aficionado, like I said.
Same. Me either.
But it was also like very like white rock, and I feel like I couldn't really like connect with any of it. Yeah. And, you know, they had Questlove as an executive music producer.
Yeah.
They had three music supervisors working with him, and it was much more accessible. Like, there was definitely, like, you know, like you said, the punk stuff with Simon and a lot of obscure stuff, but they also just used artists that you could actually at least name. People know David Bowie mostly, you know,
yeah.
Outkast, right. Frank Ocean, Prince, Biggie, Boyz II Men. Like, these are all at least names that we know. Wu-Tang, you know, so that just felt like it made the subject matter in addition to her character just way more accessible.
Right.
That I definitely had a problem with in the movie.
I agree with that. I think I definitely prefer the music in the show, but maybe that's like contemporary recency bias, I guess. It's also just more catered to our generation and to us. Whereas, like, I don't know, those guys are just dicks and they're such snots about what they like. And I guess you are what you like, but I'm very much of the mind that like what you want to like to get through the day. Like, I don't care if you like to read romance novels, as long as you're not like molesting children. Like, it's do you like what you like. Life is too hard to get through. Like, it's hard enough. Why do you have to judge people for liking the art that they like? I hate that.
Yeah, I think they had, even though they did pull a lot from the movie and the book, I feel like they had some, I feel like I enjoyed their conversations, their debates a lot more in this one. So what, basically what you're referencing is they have a debate about whether they should sell a Michael Jackson record to somebody who comes in the shop. And it's, you know, just, it's this question that we've now been facing in the last few years, especially with Me Too, is like, how do we handle problematic artists and musicians that we love? They mentioned Michael Jackson, they referenced Kanye West. They also have a debate later in the show about villains and anti-heroes, which I thought was really interesting. So, you know, is it possible for a main character to be a villain? One of the characters says, no, you can't, because like, you're inherently supposed to root for them. And so basically what we've done as a society is just relabel the anti-heroes in order to allow ourselves to root for this person who is normally a villain, but happens to be the main character. People like Don Draper, or, you know, you name it. I thought that was really interesting too. And I do think that they explored kind of in a meta way, almost the premise of the show, which is like reinventions and remakes, right? Because they're constantly talking about covers versus the original. They talk about Can't Take My Eyes Off of You, which one is better, Frankie Valli and the Four Seasons or Lauryn Hill. There's also in the same episode, which is the pilot, I believe, someone is playing Ann Peebles' I Can't Stand the Rain, which was famously and dopely sampled by Missy Elliott in The Rain, Super Duper Fly.
It's the best song ever.
It, look it up right now. One of the best song samples ever. And so I thought it was really cool how they had these, like, they tackled these things indirectly. So I feel like, you know, even in that way, they're kind of having this indirect debate about what's better, the original or the remake, you know? When they're talking about these covers. And for me, just thinking in terms of music just purely, I love that, because like, song samples are pointing me to artists that I never would have known about, right? So it's mm-hmm. giving me an accessible point, which is the thing that I just happened to discover first, and saying, hey, I was inspired by this other thing. And like, you know, there's that writer, Austin Kleon, who I forgot the name of his title. It's like something about like artists stealing work or something like that. His whole philosophy is that we shouldn't feel shamed about quote unquote stealing, and that everybody steals. Like, art throughout history is all about stealing. It's all about, you know, imitation is the sincerest form of flattery, all that. We all use art as a canvas to do our own versions, and we do that mm-hmm. enough times, and then we form our own style. And so I thought that was actually a really interesting way that they tackled it without talking about it straight on. And I also think that they talked about, they definitely have a love of music, you know, that episode that we were talking about where she's debating whether to sell that, buy that record collection. Mm-hmm. She says that music should be everyone, good people, shitty people. And I feel like, you know, they talked about like music saving their lives and stuff like that. Did you have any other things?
No, other than the fact that I loved it. And I agree with you in that I think that the way that music was used throughout the series was really smart. And it did feel really meta that this was a reboot. And then they like intentionally like peppered all of these original songs in that were eventually remade. And that they did even have that conversation about the anti-hero when like Rob herself is supposed to be one.
Yep.
And so I just thought it was really well done, and I really would have loved to see a second season. And Hulu, you just like made a mistake, man.
Don't do it again. Do you like Jack Black in anything?
No. Oh, maybe School of Rock, and also maybe The Holiday.
He feels just as Jack Blacky in those two movies as he does here, which it's interesting.
I hate him here, and I disagree, because I think he's like mildly muted in both School of Rock and The Holiday. Like just taken down like a little notch, enough to make him palatable to me.
Got it.
Because I think he's just a disgusting asshole in this one.
That's fair.
And I can't believe that this was his breakout. And I'm sure like a bunch of people are going to be like, Stephanie, you just don't get it. Like,
it's fine. I don't get the movie, so it's fine.
I don't get the movie either.
Okay. second to last question is, did you want to talk about Thomas Doherty for like 2 seconds?
I did! I didn't know if I should bring that up or not, but like, damn, he's so hot.
He's very hot. Didn't know him from literally anything. So do you want to like give a little blurb about where you know him from?
I know him from, well, okay. So the kids know him and he is a big, huge deal because of Disney's The Descendants. He's like in that franchise. That franchise is like one of the best performing things on Disney since High School Musical or whatever. And he is very famously in a relationship with his co-star, Dove Cameron. And they're really fucking cute together. And actually, if they seem like really fucking in love. And he, in interviews, he's said, like, people have asked him, like, is she the one? And he's like, yeah.
So they're definitely gonna break up. He's like 25.
I was just about to say they're one of those couples that if they broke up, I'd be really upset. And I know that it's going to happen because they're so young, but like, can't we just believe for a minute that they might stay together?
No. Speaking of, that was another thing that I thought in my head and then they referenced in the show, because when he first came on screen, I was like, and then I looked up his age, I said he was a child. And then after she almost hooks up with him the first time, she says, she walks out and says, he's a fucking child.
Yeah.
or yeah, that was the exact quote.
Yeah, so, 10 years younger than her. And yeah. But I know him from Legacies. He plays someone's love interest slash like an old vampire on Legacies, which is a spinoff of The Vampire Diaries slash the originals. And I really, really like that series. And it's very original Buffy-esque because it's like Monster of the Week-y. But he's good in that as well, but that's what he's best known for is the Disney stuff. And I just think he's a hottie. And he's a little young for me. And yet, just like Timothée Chalamet, I love him.
He's very hot. I was surprised he has at least 2 songs on the official Spotify playlist. And I'm wondering if that's purely just because like they would seem dicks if they didn't put him on it. But in any case.
Well, I think he is known. He does kind of bill himself as a quote unquote musician. So I think that might have been part of his casting. And he is part of the Disney family. So I'm sure that is how he got the role to begin with.
And I think they only put the song, they only included in the playlist the ones that were actually in the episodes. So there's probably a loophole there. Okay, final question.
Mm-hmm.
Zoe Kravitz in real life married to Carl Glusman. They got married last year. Beautiful wedding. They got married at her father, aka Lenny Kravitz, mm-hmm. at his house in Paris. Mm-hmm. All of her Big Little Lies cast members were there. This season 2 had already wrapped and shot. If you're Zoe, do you invite Meryl Streep or does that just feel stupid?
Was Meryl Streep not there?
I didn't see her there. I saw the 4 of them, which makes sense because they were, you know, the original cast.
Yeah.
But it's like, okay, you guys go bowling together. You're in the group threads. Do you not do it because you're like, there's no chance she's coming? But it's like, okay, but do you do it because it's like, well, if she says no, then no big deal. And if not, but then you have to live with the fact that Meryl Streep said no.
I think you do it as a courtesy and then just expect that she's not going to come. Yeah.
Also, she's like, I mean, she probably won't like it'd be hard to argue who would take the most attention out of a wedding like that when your mother is Lisa Bonet, your stepfather, Papa Bear, is Jason Momoa, and your father is Lenny Kravitz.
Yeah.
But still, you know. Oh, and you've invited, like, fucking Nicole Kidman and Reese Witherspoon and Laura Dern.
It was like, nobody thinks it's weird that Nicole Kidman and Lenny Kravitz used to date, and she's, like, at this wedding.
That was, like, 3 husbands ago, man. It's fine. Also, but can we talk about that? Because Lenny Kravitz, Jason Momoa, and like Lisa Bonet, like as a whole unit, they get like top 5 best celebrity family like uncoupling whatever award.
Yeah. Well, it's also just like they're collectively like the hottest people on this planet.
Yeah, they also make the top 5. Would you say that Zoe Kravitz is like top 5 most beautiful child of 2 celebrities?
Yeah, for sure.
Who else would be on that list? I feel like the Beckhams have a good chance. They're still a little young, but like Brooklyn's pretty, you know, he's getting there.
Oh, I would say like Reese Witherspoon's daughter.
Oh, she's like a carbon copy, yeah. For sure. With like just a sprinkle of Ryan Phillippe.
It's insane.
But basically carbon copy, yeah. And like Deacon and like, yeah, he can grow into that.
It's crazy. And
what about the Jolie Pitt Jolie, they've got twins.
I just don't know what they look like. I don't know what they look like yet. you know,
but like, I'm just saying the genes in that family.
I haven't seen that. But it was like crazy. Like I had to, like during the first season of Big Little Lies, I was watching part of it with my sister. And like, remember that scene where Zoe Kravitz like dances at that party and she basically looks like really, really, really hot.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And, I had to be like, so that's Lisa Bonet and Lenny Kravitz's daughter to my sister. And then she was like, oh, no wonder. Like, I'm like, yeah.
Yeah,
but can't you tell though? Like they're basically carbon copies of each other. Like,
although like, you definitely see more of like the Lisa Bonet, you know, vibe.
Yeah, for sure. But that's what I'm saying is like, she looks exactly like Lisa Bonet. Like, how could you not know that she is like Lisa Bonet? Sure.
Oh, there's like certain shots in this show where you're like, you do like a double take, especially because like the way that she's styled.
Yeah.
It's very much like the modern. It's like basically if her mother was growing up today, like that's how she would be dressing.
Yeah, for sure.
It's like still bohemian, but it's still like cool.
Because I'm trying to think of like grown children, you know, people who are like working today.
Yeah.
There's like Lily Rose Depp, but she's still kind of like a baby.
She's still kind of a, see, that could have been your portal into Chalamet.
I know, but I thought we were going to wrap soon. So speaking of Timmy though, he does have a penchant for like Hollywood dynasty girls. Like before he dated Lily Rose Depp, he was dating Madonna's daughter. Yeah, I don't really know what that says about him.
I mean, oh, you know who's like, they're not like, you know, A-list, but what's her name? Kelly Ripa.
Oh.
And beautiful children.
I haven't seen them. I don't know what they look like.
Yeah, go on Instagram. They really look like carbon mixes of the two of them.
Wow, crazy.
Beautiful people.
Genes are crazy, man. I mean, I don't think like you would agree with me on this, but I think Dakota Johnson's pretty hot, so.
Oh, so her and Chris Martin will make a hot baby?
Are they together?
Oh, yeah, they've been dating.
No, I mean, Dakota Johnson's really hot, and so, like, you know, she's the daughter of Don Johnson and Melanie Griffith, so she's a Hollywood baby. Yeah.
I see what you're saying. Sorry. Yeah.
I didn't realize they were together. That's weird.
Yeah, I think she was the next one on his list after J-Law.
Oh, weird. I feel like that J-Law breakup happened like ages ago.
Yeah, now she's married to an art dealer or whatever.
Yeah, good for her.
Is she working? I miss her doing press tours.
I know, I do too, but I think she's a little bit traumatized by, or if I were her, I would be a little bit traumatized by her like string of flops, you know?
Yeah.
Maybe she's just trying to like take a break because she, like, there was a period in which she was like nonstop working for a while.
Also, maybe she contributed to that Chris Pratt thing that we talked about earlier. Just saying.
Yeah, rumors.
Rumors. Ooh, just like rumors between Lady Gaga and Bradley Cooper. Just saying. But that was like long ago. Oh, can I just before we like finally wrap on this, part of also why I struggled with the movie is because like I didn't understand what the big deal about Laura was. Mac is so hot in this show and like their chemistry is palpable and like I was definitely sort of like mostly rooting for them to get back together. And I love the way that they revealed the cheat like at the end, whereas he in the movie comes out and says it. And like she's fucking weird, dude. Laura's weird. Like, we don't get to know who she is. We don't really understand, like, what their problems are.
They don't even have, yeah, to your point, they don't have good chemistry.
They don't have good chemistry. And, like, what's the big deal? Like, it definitely seems like he's obsessing over her, just obsess and be possessive and, like, stroke his ego as opposed to, like, you know, he does that, like, top five list about her, like, oh, like, the way she smells and all that bullshit. But, like, I didn't even take that, like, seriously. He didn't even deliver that in a sincere way. And then they get together and it's just, like, because she's, quote, unquote, emotionally exhausted. And he's just, quote, unquote, tired of, like, thinking about love all the time.
Yeah, I totally agree. Like, I agree with you in that Mac and Rob, you just get it. Like, their chemistry together is,
they're
like
so
electric.
Hot.
And
they're
so hot together.
Oh,
and you're just
accent,
like,
I really,
yes. Woo! Oh my God, the accent. Woo! And I really just want them to, even when she like runs into him on the street for the first time, I'm just like, fuck, you guys belong together. I really hope you guys end up together. I really hope you guys end up together. And then she goes back to Fran, which I guess she has to, but I'm like, I thought you were supposed to end up together. I was very invested in this.
Here's the thing. Is she just doing the Fran thing because it's like a way to like show herself that she's like grown as opposed to like, hey, two people who maybe really did fuck up with each other a little bit, but maybe have grown past it and can be back together. Do you know what I mean? Like, I just feel like they seemed primed to like actually maybe get together, as opposed to like it just being like, I don't know.
They meaning her and Fran or her and
Her and Mac felt like they were primed to get back together.
Oh, yeah. That's what I was saying. Like, I was hoping for them to get back
together. I'm just questioning the Fran thing, because it's like, is that just a way of being like, no, 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 you've grown up, you're mature now, like, you're going to do the, you know, the not selfish thing and go back to the nice guy, as opposed to like, hey, it's okay if you, like, reconcile and admit your shit to your ex and you guys can work it out. Like, do you know what I mean?
Yeah, well, I think that's why Fran is so, has his walls up at the end.
No, and I love that. And see, like,
yeah,
that is so much more realistic than the Laura thing. Because, like, the whole time in the movie, like, she's picking up his calls. She's, like, meeting him for drinks. She's, like,
right.
And, like, I get it. They were together for a long time. She cares about him. But, like, you don't do that. You don't enable the behavior. And if you do, it's because you're just as fucked up as he is. But that doesn't mean you two should be together. It means neither of you should be together with each other. That couple just didn't make sense to me at all. And like, if that's your whole crux, is this boy chasing this girl? I'm not invested in the boy, in the girl, or the boy and the girl together. So like, and I'm not a music nerd. So like, what am I following here, guys?
Nothing.
And if you're you, you hate Jack Black. So nothing. And it's not based in New York. So like, you got nothing for me.
Moral of the story is don't watch the movie if you haven't seen
Honestly,
it.
Honestly, just go straight to the show. If you love the book, like whatever, Godspeed to you. But like, just go straight to the show. Unless you're a whiny white male, in which case watch the movie. Like, that's your jam.
Yeah.
You'll fit in. You'll fit right in.
Well, guys, thank you for listening to this episode of Repeak. If you've made it this far, we are very appreciative. Be sure to follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Repeak Pod. And if you have some time and if you like this episode, please leave us a review on iTunes and 5 stars. It really helps us out. Please do it. And we'll be back next week.
See ya.
Bye.